My name's Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Delighted to have Richie Sadlier with us. You know Richie as Ireland's best TV football analyst, but that's only his part-time gig. His main job is, well, he's a great man for listening as well as for talking, and particularly with teenagers. He has launched a digital teaching program to help schools deliver social, personal and health education. And that's, of course, something that's going to come compulsory in our secondary schools from September next year. Richie Sadlier, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Matt. Thanks a million for having me.
Psychotherapist, that is what you are. That's your full-time profession, isn't it? And counsellor.
Yeah, I've been a psychotherapist practising since around 2014, I think. And then I started to work into schools in and around that time. And a few years later, I flipped the focus of my therapy practice from working with adults to working with teenagers. And I've been really just heavily involved in the world of young people in lots of different ways over the last decade or so.
Why? What was the attraction of that to you?
I suppose when I first started to go into classrooms, I just really enjoyed it. You've done lots of different jobs. You've done different roles over your life. And you know when you just do something and you go, God, this is really enjoyable. I like this. And I was getting a good reaction from the students and getting lots of encouragement from the staff, and the feedback from parents was positive, blah, blah, blah. But mainly, I just loved being in a room where particularly whether it's mental health or sexual health, there are lots of the topics in the subject of SPHE. Sometimes there's a difficulty to know how to broach certain topics, or maybe a reluctance among the students in the room to ask questions or to get involved. And I just loved that challenge. And then over the years, kind of found ways of kind of being really effective in a room, which was just kind of lessening my role and kind of promoting their voices and just being a facilitator rather than being an expert, and just kind of flipping the balance to going, they're the experts and I'm not, which kind of made being in a classroom even easier. Because I do think a lot of people, when they think of the things they think I do, they think I must have loads of really clever answers to all questions the teenagers ask, or that I have to have solutions for teenagers. I just think the best way to be when you're in a classroom is to facilitate them when you're talking about these topics. In maths and geography, there are specific right and wrong answers. When you're talking about SPHE and it's well-being, or your decisions around your future or your relationships, your friendships, your family dynamics, there aren't any right or wrong answers. And if you can facilitate a discussion, then that's how learning takes place. So I really loved that role and that approach, and it got results.
Although in previous generations, and I suspect there might be some parents who would say, there are right and wrong answers. It's not just a question of discussion. There are certain boundaries that have to be set, and you don't actually go beyond those.
Yeah. So I would always just put that to a class, whether it's relationships or social media usage or anything to do with the online world or communication within your family. I just kind of go, what would you do in this hypothetical scenario? Or what advice would you give to the client that I'm just going to describe to you that I worked with 3 years ago? So lots of hypothetical scenarios. So no one in the room is exposed or vulnerable. And somebody will come up with an answer and somebody else will come up with something slightly different. And then I'll invite them to explain the differences to one another. And then someone else will join in and very quickly realise, gas lads, isn't it? There's loads of ways to approach this topic. And your job as young people is to work out what's the best approach for you. And if we're in a relationship scenario, it's about how do you and your partner work out, well, what's the way that works for you? And you will learn in life that what works for you and your partner now will be different from what worked with you and your previous partner or your next partner. So you're kind of getting them all the time to be, to develop their skills in critical thinking and to be able to assess their options and to take on board differences of opinions and to listen and also to talk. So see all those little elements, you can do that really easily in a classroom with a group of people who are required to be there. They can't leave with a subject that you now have to teach.
I watched a little video that you have as an example. I think you had a group of about eight people in it, or eight teenagers with you. Is that the sort of standard group? Because, you know, I think maybe if you have a bigger classroom, if you've 19 or 20 or even 25, that a lot of people might perhaps hide within an amount like that number, whereas within is eight sort of like the best number of people to get into a conversation.
You know, so we've developed an online platform that teachers can use in a classroom to bring their class through the whole curriculum of SPHE. And one of the elements of the platform is lots of different videos. And some of them are discussions that I've held with teenagers. And we came up with about seven or eight, because if you have too many more, there's too many. So we clip it into videos, sometimes between 4 and 8 minutes of teenagers talking about the topic of that day's lesson. So a teacher can show an example to their students in the classroom of teenagers on screen talking about the topic. And then the teacher can facilitate a discussion among the classroom about people's reactions to what they heard from the topic. And because the people that they're watching are people of their own age, they're listening. If it was someone my age with a camera on me going, guys, wait till I tell you how you should act in relationships.
That's just a lecture.
It's a lecture by somebody who clearly doesn't know anything about the world because I'm 30 years older than them. But when it's their peers, when it's 18-year-olds, like 16 and 17-year-olds really tune in. So it was just a mechanism. Did you ever see the documentary I did? It was called Let's Talk About Sex.
Yeah.
It was about, you know, how do you reform the SPHE curriculum? And in that, cameras came in with me to transition year classes and filmed workshops. It was actually a couple of teenagers said to me afterwards when they watched the documentary, they were like, fair enough, you were great and all that, but like, I really got loads from watching the teenagers. And the girl who said that to me, the two girls, they were about 16 at the time. And again, it was just as late as of a million examples. It was like teenagers really want to know what's going on with other teenagers. So let's promote teenage voices to help teenagers join the conversation.
Something else that I noticed watching the video was that although you're well able to talk, as you're doing now, I mean, you're a great talker and I've done work with you previously at events and I know how good you are at talking. You're also a really good listener. And you spend the time in this documentary listening and just sort of quick prompts to keep the conversation going. For the teachers who will be doing SPHE, how important is that going to be for them, do you think?
I think, and lots of people who work in this topic know that the role of an SPHE teacher is described as a facilitator. There are other lessons where you have to direct the student to certain answers in order to get certain grades in the exam coming up. But an SPHE, you facilitate their learning. So the pressure is off really from you being the one who has to come up with the answer. If a kid says to you, you know, how much drink is too much drink? Or what's a healthy relationship? Or how do you know when you're in a relationship you should break up with someone? Or how do you know that's the time you dig in and work? Like, how big does a red flag have to be for you to be out of there? Or do you just talk? So they're all really, there is no answer to those questions that's applicable to every scenario. So it's those facilitative skills that teachers are being asked by the Department of Education to draw on, where you encourage students to explore what they think the answers are, to hear each other talk about it, debate if that comes up. But also to realise that there are lots of different ways to approach these questions, and the way we learn is to hear lots of different solutions, and you do that by having a conversation.
When this comes into the Leaving Cert cycle, 60 hours of structured teaching and learning across 5 and 6 years, there's not going to be an exam at the end of it, is there?
No, this isn't.
Thank God for that, because that would almost defeat the entire purpose, yeah, wouldn't it?
It really would. I mean, if you started to examine this area with young people, what you would just do is give them set answers that they'd have to learn off by heart in order to get a grade. And I think the real potential, like I think this is a huge opportunity for us, because I'm sure on your show, and I know on every single other show, when issues related to young people, whether it's alcohol and substances, whether it's social media or AI, whether it's porn or sex or the manosphere, often the discussion is on the problem with young people. How do we address it? And now that this is mandatory in schools, I think this is a great opportunity, but the reality is a lot of schools will see this mandatory element as a problem, because they now have to go, we have to fit this in somewhere in an already crammed timetable. And where are we going to get the resources? And how are we going to support teachers? So what we've come up with is the solution to that problem. The resource is now developed. Teachers can operate it really comfortably, and students will engage with the material because of the way in which it's all been put together. We're trialling it in 42 schools at the moment. So getting loads of comments from teachers and on behalf of their students. And the filmed material is the stuff that's really getting student engagement in the classroom, which is what we want. Like, SPHE isn't about sending teachers off to extensive training so that they know all the answers to everything.
My name is Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was, by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
Give me a mountain with lots to do. Give me the sunshine, give me a dew. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing mountain dew. So give me my good friends, give me a dew.
Grab some friends and an ice-cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew!
Really, to support teachers, not just to navigate through the curriculum as their job now requires, but also to help them create conditions in a classroom where they can get students to engage in this material.
The website is letstalkSPHE.com.
Mm-hmm.
But just tell me a little bit more about, as you say, it's 30 years since you were a teenager.
Yes.
And your autobiography has lots about your teenage years and your early adulthood, and I suppose the immaturity and the drinking and the sexual behaviour and all the rest of it. How different do you find the lives of teenagers now to what you remember from your life? Because just one example, again, from the video I was looking at, this idea that because of mobile phones, friends and partners are sort of tracking each other to see where they are. And God knows, in your day, can you imagine if anyone had been tracking you to see where you are and what you were up to?
Like, I often sometimes have a bit of fun with teenagers today when I give them examples from my era, partly just to let them know that they're the experts and I'm not. I've no lived experience in what they're going through, but also that things have changed so much that they're the ones learning on the job, like, because they're the only generation having to deal with what's in the landscape today. And I tell them, so, do you know you could have a relationship when you were a teenager, when I was 16, and not hear from your partner for days? You might see them at the weekend. And they're baffled by this, because one of the issues that, it's not just teenage relationships, but adult ones as well, it's this requirement to be available and always on. If you get a message, you reply to it. If someone posts something about you and tags you in, you've to interact with it. and the location. Like, you could go into, if you wanted to, a classroom of young people and say, you know, define a healthy relationship, and you'll get general words like, you know, communication, respect, listening. But it's way more useful to go in and go, can you describe what it's like to be in a relationship today? And then you hear them talk about the realities. And we did maybe the discussion you're referring to as well, like, you know, the location function on your phone. So we'd ask them, is that a healthy thing or is that an unhealthy thing? Now, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I know I've no experience of being 17 where one of the demands made on me by my partner was that she needed to know where I was at all times. And I don't know at the age of 17 how I would have navigated that, but that's a reality for teenagers today. So do we lean in and say, guys, that's a red flag, that's controlling possessive behavior, or is it something else? Is it just concern? Is it curiosity? Or is it just because everyone else does it, we have to feel like we have to do it?
And yet, ironically, those same teenagers would go absolutely ballistic if their parents were trying to follow them and find my iPhone or whatever to know where they are.
Like, there are loads of elements that young people have to deal with, and there aren't snappy answers. But what's getting smaller and smaller are the spaces where they get to talk in a facilitated, safe way and hear from one another and learn. It's not really available online. They tend not to happen in unsupervised scenarios because they all have devices in their hands. They don't just sit around and have discussions.
But just to finish, Richie, you know, just thinking again, you know, when you were a teenager 30 years ago, can you imagine what your life would have been like if you had a mobile phone in your hand all the time, if you were on social media all the time, if you had pornography available to you all the time in your pocket?
Yeah, again, do you remember the lengths? You can describe them if you want. Do you remember the lengths you had to go to watch pornography when you were a teenager? Compare it to today. Boys and girls just put the hand in their pocket. And if there's no one else in the room that they happen to be in, they're watching online porn. And their selection of scenes that they could choose from is limitless. Now, 30 years ago, if you were of a mind where you wanted to watch pornography, you needed a video cassette. You needed a VCR player, which was usually in the main sitting room, which meant you needed an empty house. So a little bit of planning and elements had to fall your way. So we now know that exposure to pornography for young people is just so prominent. Again, I have discussions with young people on this, and a couple of lads, I remember, told me they get mocked mercilessly because they're not really into porn. Adults might sit here and go, God, if my son or daughter was really into porn, they'd be singled out among the group as the one who had the issue. But in loads of social groups at the moment, if you're not into it or you're not actively sharing it and commenting on it and talking openly about it, you're the weirdo. So we as adults have to get our head around the idea. We don't really fully understand their world, but we can help them navigate it if we let them talk about it. So I think SBHE classes are now the real opportunity to do that, which is why we put so much time and effort into creating the resource.
Letstalksbhe.com is where teachers or parents can go to find more. Richie Sadler, you're always great having you with us. Thank you very much for being with us.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
Three employees and two work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.